everyone, and welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, episode 34. We're here this week talking about episode 311, Alpha Pact, the penultimate episode of, well, I guess season 3A, not the entire season 3, but what we're considering season 3 so far before the mid-season finale. As usual, if you have anything to say about this episode of the podcast or the episode of Teen Wolf we just watched, you can get in touch with us on Twitter, on Tumblr, or on our email address. That's NATWpodcast on Twitter, NATWpodcast@gmail.com, or notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com. And this week, as promised, we have our special guest star returning, Chantelle Rhodes, to hang out with me and Karen, because the episode we just watched was another one featuring her. So, hi girls, how are you guys today?
Hi.
Very excited again.
Cool. So, Karen obviously is here as usual, and I am here as usual, and Chantelle is here because it's a special occasion. So that's going to be fun for everyone. And Chantelle's here today mainly as a fan recapping the episode with us. It's not a full-on interview. She's going to be going through as a Teen Wolf podcast guest host to recap the episode. So you excited about that?
Oh yeah, this is what I live for.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, to start with, Karen, do you want to go into the synopsis and then we can sort of get into the episode?
Yeah, sure. Basically, the synopsis reads that with time running out, Scott is forced to make a difficult choice in order to save both friends and family while Derek and Peter try to save Cora's life. So what were your favorite quotes, Natalie?
Okay, I had two from this episode. Obviously, we always pick two, but the first one, I don't know if it was meant to be funny. I don't think it was meant to be funny, but because I'm a horrible person, I just really cracked up at this moment. It's basically, I mean, it's a very important and dramatic moment, and it's very truthful. When Isaac calls Derek out for, you know, basically screwing everything up, you know, hooking up with Jennifer, you know, all of that kind of thing, you know, not helping Scott, you know, just sitting around waiting for Cora to die pretty much and sitting around being pathetic. And everything he's saying, look, it's all very true and, you know, it's all, you know, that it's kind of good that he stood up to Derek and all of that kind of stuff. But when he leaves, he was like, I'm going to go help Scott and Stiles. And then he just goes, you can sit here and perfect the art of doing nothing, and slams the door. And it's so overdramatic. And Isaac is usually, like, Daniel Sharman is usually one of my favorite actors on the show. Like, I think that he does really good, subtle work. But this was just, it was so, like, flouncy. And it just reminded me of, like perfect the art of doing nothing. Like, it just made me think it should be, like, the title of, like, a record, like a music album for an emo band or something. I don't think it was meant to be funny, and it was truthful, and it was nicely phrased, but because I'm sick, I just found it really funny. So there's that. But the other one was a little bit more serious, which was actually Chris Argent, when Stiles and Allison go to him to try and figure out what to do, and it's sort of right after this, you know, while Isaac is on his way from flouncing out of Derek's to hanging out with the Argents. The others are kind of, you know, passive-aggressively, you know, complaining about Scott, which obviously they're very disappointed. And Chris says, both of you just try to remember he's just doing what he thinks is right. I mean, yes, that's true, but it also kind of, Chris is really the person to understand Scott in this scenario, isn't he? Because he obviously has spent, you know, his whole life doing things that he believed was right, and now has had this big sort of change or turnaround. So it was just interesting to me that he was the one to kind of have Scott's perspectives when his friends were not actually, you know, they were sort of vilifying him. It was just interesting to me that he was less upset about Scott joining these, you know, super bad werewolves than Stiles and Allison were, even though he was doing it to help, you know, to help Stiles' father and everything. So, I don't know, it just interested me. But, Karen, what were yours?
My first one was from Lydia, and it was when she said, "Someone tried to strangle me, and I survived. I don't need to hide that." And I really loved that line for so many reasons. And I saw this gift set on Tumblr where it compared her in this scene and then the scene where she's like covering up her baggy eyes and stuff with makeup, and she's hiding all the pain and the hurt inside of her, and she just kind of like tries to go on with life. And here, like, she's much more stripped down, but she's also stronger. And I just really loved seeing that out of Lydia.
Yeah, I really liked that scene with her mother as well. Like, it's, you don't see too much of them, and I really liked, you know, when I heard that the mum was going to be in this episode, I was like, oh my god, is there going to be some big, like, family reveal about, like, you know, their line of banshiness or something like that? And I'm kind of glad it wasn't. I really liked this just normal moment, and I liked, you know, we've heard a few weird things about Lydia's mother, like, you know, whether she's, you know, actually a good parent or not. We've got a few perspectives, you know, in the show of her sort of not noticing things and being that kind of, like, absent, high-strung kind of person. But I liked here that, like, when Lydia was like, I don't need to cover that up, she was like, yeah, good for you, as opposed to being like, oh, darling, no, you must be, you know, presentable. And then the little moment after that where they sort of giggled together. And what you said about Lydia looking stripped down is true. I noticed that as well, that she looks much less, yeah, made up and all of that kind of thing, but so much prettier. Like, I think it's the nicest she's ever looked, how she looked in this episode. And I really loved her.
She looked natural.
Yeah, she really did. My second quote was from when Deaton said, "You'd be surprised at what you've yet to see." And this is right after Stiles is like, oh, you know, how much more else is there after everything that we've been through? And Deaton sort of just kind of laughs at him. And I love this line because it really, this scene in particular, and we'll talk about it when we get there too, but it really sets up the second half of season three and after season three, and I'm really, really excited to see that and see everything that they're going to do. And I just love the mystery and the anticipation in Deaton's words when he's like, yeah, you haven't seen anything yet.
It did sort of set it up to become like a bit supernaturally, like the show Supernatural, where they could have like any monster they felt like making up, which, we've talked about how the werewolves in this world are, like, quite natural in that, like, it's sort of all ties into, like, what the human body could potentially do when pushed to extremes that don't exist naturally, as opposed to just being, like, a magic thing, you know? So I'm curious to see what kind of other supernatural things are there, yeah, and how they yeah, work it, if they keep being really super, you know, really naturalistic in the way that we've seen, or if some stuff is just completely far out.
Yeah, I'm excited for that too. And plus, the show is going in such a different way. If you expect it to be more scarier and more terrifying, and a lot more mist coming in and out of the Beacon Hills, so I'm very excited for that as well too.
So, Chantel, did you pick out some quotes as well?
Yes, I did. The first one is from Peter, and it's when he's telling him about Jennifer, and he says, she wants you to come to her. It's all part of her little seduction, and she feels seducing you. She needs you on her side. And when I first saw that, I said, whoa, wait a minute. Peter, of all people, is telling Derek about love and seduction. But then it's like, well, wait a minute. He does have a point, because Derek is head over heels for this lady, and this lady is a killer. She's a Duroc. And for it to come out of Peter's mouth, it's like, I still don't trust you, but you still have a good point.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Peter, this episode confused me. He went up and down, like he went like on and off, kind of like a light switch. Like, there were moments I felt were so genuine, and then moments where I felt was so manipulative, and I really don't know what he's up to.
Yeah.
And did you pick a second one?
Yeah. And the other one came from Pasha Silinski, where he was tied up in the root cellar, and he talked about his wife, Claudia, and he said, I knew immediately she was talking about my wife, but then that other part of my brain, the looks for clues, for fingerprints, for logical connections, and then he says, but I wasn't, because I didn't believe, I just didn't believe. And I thought, first of all, Lyndon just did a great job in that scene. And we really saw Papa Selinsky very vulnerable and not the sheriff.
Yeah.
And for him to admit that, yeah, I wasn't ready to believe, but I'm ready to believe it now.
Yeah.
I think it was just a great transition into finally he knows what's going on.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I love that as well when, you know, he kind of goes sarcastically, so have you been tied up a lot as a werewolf hunter? And Chris just looks at him and he goes, you knew. Like, and I'm like, yeah, he so did. Like, it's not like he'd been keeping this a full-on secret the whole time. It wasn't like, oh, I know everything, but I'm keeping it under wraps. But he clearly had a lot of suspicion that he pushed away for a very long time, which, you know, it is interesting that he sort of fought it for so long. But I guess if you are meant to be that kind of logical and practical, it's just something you can't allow yourself to get into.
Yeah, yeah.
To kind of, you know, before we get into our discussion, Chantel, we were wondering how much of this episode did you know was going to happen, like, obviously other than your part in the episode, but before seeing the final product, how much did you know about it when you were filming?
I knew, well, the funny thing was I had gotten my script the day that I landed, really had time to just look at my scene, but after my scene, I got to read the whole thing, and it was really good. Next to episode 10, this one is kind of my next to my favorite one, because it's more heartfelt, and you see these three kids that we, you know, literally grew up with being teenagers into being full adults in a blink of an eye, literally. And but I didn't see the final product until yesterday when it was shown to everybody, but I knew quite a bit.
So you also got to do those video blogs for after the episodes, the Fantastic Show. They look like they were all filmed, like, at one time. So when was that done? Like, did you get to watch all of the episodes in one go so you knew what you were talking about in each one? Or what happened with those?
Those were actually shot 2 days after my scene. And we had to watch the first four episodes that were rough cut. Mm-hmm. And then read 5 through 9, like, little spark notes type form, like, with bullet points.
Yeah.
And then we read the whole thing of 10 and 11, and then 12, we didn't get to read that until after we shot the Fantastic Show, because 12 wasn't finished yet. So we got to read that when we finished the Fantastic Show. Yeah, so pretty much know what's going on the whole season, which was good, because if I didn't, I would have a heart attack.
Yeah.
yeah. How do you think you feel?
You know, we're all just having heart attacks here, so it's all very well and good for some people. Did you get to shoot a Fantastic Show for after 12, or is the 11 the last one of the season?
No, we have a 12. The 12th one is, don't even get to recap the show or the episode because we didn't know about it.
Oh, cool. That'll be correct. That'll be awesome then.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah, so he's on there.
Yeah, doing that, you got to meet, like, a lot, like, when you came on in season 2, you sort of only got to meet the people you shot with and one or two other people, but with doing this, you got to hang out with pretty much everyone. So who did you most enjoy meeting doing the Fantastic Show? Like, what, you know, how was that experience?
I enjoyed all of them, but I would have to say Keahu, because I just lost it. I couldn't. He was just... Oh man, he was everything. Just everything. But it was really good to meet Melissa and Lennon, and I met Max and Charlie briefly back in December, and Haley, she was really cool as well, and Brian, who played Ennis. It was really good. I'm glad I got to meet some more of the cast this time.
Yeah, and I mean, it's also really nice that you are sort of working on the levels of being a full cast member rather than having, you know, a locked down, like, one page of random script and then not knowing what's happening, but that to actually be, you know, given the entire script for an episode and then even given the, you know, the scripts for other episodes that are not yet, you know, not yet shot and sort of being trusted with that. So actually being sort of a trusted part of the team, that's a pretty big step forward.
Yeah, it is. I'm pretty good at keeping secrets. So you should see my room. I have like binders everywhere, and I put another binder on top of another binder and put it somewhere. Like, okay, if someone breaks in this house, God forbid, they won't see the script. And I go a little overboard, but
no, that's awesome.
It's been good though.
That's awesome. I guess we can go into the actual episode discussion. We won't sit here and start bugging you about what happens in episode 12. You should.
In episode 12, I will say there's a lot of blood and dirt, so.
Oh, blood and dirt. Teen Wolf, great. Yeah. My favorite. Blood and dirt. But yeah, Karen, do you want to start before this goes to a bad place?
Yes. Okay, so one of the first major scenes, at least one of the ones that really stuck out to me in the beginning of this episode, was when Isaac and Peter are in the car. They just saved Cora, and they're sort of waiting to figure out where Scott is, where Stiles is, where Derek is. And Peter says, you know, the Argents are right behind us, and Isaac sort of has that funny line about, hey, the last time you saw them, didn't you? Yeah. And so I was just like, you know, Peter ran away, and I was like, wow, you know, is he afraid of the Argents? Is he just doesn't want that confrontation? Like, what do you think his motivations were there? And do you think that he was sort of, because obviously I can imagine the Argents being very mad at him, but considering what Kate and the Argents have done to his family too, I can see him being really angry as well.
Yeah, I mean, they've had to, you know, they've had Derek and, you know, the Argents have had to face up to each other, and, like, everyone's kind of had to face each other. So it's really funny, like, just thinking about it, like, how many people Peter hasn't faced up to. I mean, does he just sit in the loft all day and, like, doesn't, like, interact with the world? Because, like, you know, we've seen him have to face up to Melissa and I guess, like, Lydia in this episode and the Argents. Well, not the Argents, but it's just really funny to me that he, yeah, he did run like that because, I mean, did he leave Cora? Like, did he just ditch her, you know? Was it like a panic? And I think that Peter's very insecure, but it's also maybe because the Argent code, you know, is that they don't kill innocent werewolves, but they know Peter's not innocent. So maybe they'd be like, oh, we don't care that you're semi-redeemed. Like, it's killing time for you now. But yeah, maybe he just really hates them. I don't know.
It was really funny. I could not stop laughing at that part because I said, well, here comes Isaac, and his Isaac is just it this season. Just has the best line.
I know, that kind of like awkward humor of like, I don't mean to be, but like I love that. Like, it kills me
for Peter to run out the way he did. First of all, laughter. Then I just said, oh, Peter, you just can't catch a break. You really can't. He just can't.
I think we might all have too much sympathy for him, given that he is probably quite awful. But yeah. I can't help it. I just want to give attention to this before we go on, like, to the very first scene in the episode, mainly because I think we'll get in trouble if we don't, which was the scene between Stiles and Derek in the elevator. which, again, was quite funny, but also quite sort of touching in that, I found it interesting, like, the way they shot it, like, once, you know, he was sort of slapping him, and then he woke up, and then once he woke up and they were staring at each other, they shot that from the front, they shot it from above, they shot it all around, and, it was... There were a lot of unspoken moments in this episode. Like, this isn't the only one. Like, there are a lot of, I mean, it is between those two characters, but between many characters. The moment of kind of sort of panic and understanding, it just interested me. And a lot of people were very, just very impressed with, you know, I suppose we've talked about a lot about those characters and how far they've come. But the unspoken sort of communication is, I think, more example of what we were talking about in the terms of like a forced bond, like people who are on the same side, regardless of whether they like each other or not, kind of care about each other, or like, you know, begin to care about each other without whether they want to or not. And I think that was probably the strongest example of it so far.
Yeah. And then those two together, like, because I'm a Steric shipper, but not, like, it's more fandom than show-wise. But
yeah,
to
yeah.
see Derek leaning on Styles and Styles being the stronger one, saying, hey, I got you without really saying it.
Yeah.
I thought that was amazingly done, too.
Yeah, it was very cool. And I know that a lot of people are talking about it, so I just thought I'd mention it before we got in trouble for not mentioning it.
Safe choice.
Anyway, aside from that, we have some more pain for Derek when he goes home.
Yeah, poor Derek. He gets beat up verbally and physically in this episode, and Isaac is the one giving it to him this time, and he basically says that everything is Derek's fault. And this is really funny and a good, you know, good timing on the show's part, because a lot of things have been going around about how literally everything seems to be Derek's fault. And, you know, humor aside, though, I really, really liked how Isaac stood up for himself and for, you know, for Boyd and Erica and Cora and everybody who basically Derek's sort of, I don't want to say he's ruined their lives or anything, but, you know.
But, I don't want to say he's ruined their lives, but he has.
But a lot of things have happened because of Derek, and I'm just glad that Isaac got to voice that before he said, you know, you can perfect the art of doing nothing and then slam the door.
It's true. Like, it really is true. It's, I don't mean to take away from Isaac, the validity of Isaac's point. It was just really funny. But, I mean, Cora, I still don't understand what the hell's going on with her. Is she just poisoned with mistletoe? Is that what it is? Like, I don't understand what exactly is happening.
This all started when she got hit in the head with that weight in the locker room.
Yeah.
But I don't think Wade had something in it or nothing.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've been really confused by this, basically, because Aiden hit her, but then Jennifer was the one, basically, she said, oh, I did this to her. She's been saying that. So, like, we think that maybe she, like, stopped her from healing, like, I don't know, we're really, like, from that initial injury, but we're very confused. But regardless, she is misc ill. She is miscellaneously sick, and we cannot work out why.
But
with Derek and the healing, I mean, what Peter then goes on to say next, because we asked about Gerard and stuff as well, about like, oh, is that whole pain removal thing they do, is it actual healing or is it just pain relief? And Peter's very long metaphor about wolves that Derek is like, can, you know, don't bore us, get to the frickin' chorus. Like, that was very much implying that it's like what they usually do is pain relief, and you can go a step further to healing, and that's what he wants Derek to do for Cora. But we had that whole really suspicious, like, literal, you know, when Derek is like, oh, what do I have to do? And he kind of goes, you know, oh, ho, 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 in the window. It reminded me of, like, The Little Mermaid and Ariel being like, oh, what do I have to do? And Ursula's like, you have to give me your soul or your voice or whatever. Like, it was really, his reaction was so obviously villainous. And so what do you think is going on? I mean, Chantel probably knows what's going on. Karen, what do you think is going on?
Oh, I mean, Peter has had something up his sleeve from the moment that we met him. Before we met him, before we knew that he was the Alpha, he's had things planned out for a long time. Being brought back to life was part of that. And I told you right from the very beginning, I love Peter, but he's up to something. He always has a game plan. He always has an end game. And yeah, and I think things are going exactly how he wanted them to go, but as far as what that is, I really have no idea. I mean, clearly he wants Derek to lose his alpha powers, but I don't know why, other than to maybe gain them back, but
yeah,
it's weird.
I mean, maybe they go back. Well, it doesn't make sense that they go back. Maybe he thinks they might go back to the alpha he took them from, because, I mean, in real life, most people's alpha that they kill to get their alpha powers doesn't come back to life. So maybe it's like, you know, maybe it's usually like, you know, Dumbledore's original plan for the Elder Wand that, like, the power would die with him or something, you know. But, you know, and so that if other alphas did this, the power would just go back into nothing because the alpha was already dead. But given that Peter is alive, maybe he thinks that he's going to get the alpha powers back. But, ugh, I don't know. What's going on? It's so, like, yeah.
I will say that in the finale, well, it'll come out what Peter got up his sleeve.
Oh, great. Thanks. Because I wasn't sure if this was, like, even a longer game. Like, if we didn't have time to deal with Peter's antics now and that it was going to be even longer. But, oh, no.
Yeah, like, for, like, this part, yeah, it's going to come out what Peter's up to. And after that, it's still like, well, okay, what next? But with Peter, that scene was so good. And for Ian to, you know, do that little evil Loki smirk thing,
yeah.
he's gonna tell Derek, hey, if you do this, you'll lose your status. But I don't want you to lose because Callie is really evil. But you have to save your sister, which is my niece. So what are you gonna do? Are you gonna lose it? Are you? And then you can see at the end, his Derek's eyes changed. So
yeah.
I guess Peter's getting what he wants, but it's at Derek's loss.
Oh my god, you're really stressing me out.
You see?
We should have never had this happen. We should have never brought you on. No, I'm very excited and I'm very stressed because I really love him and I really don't want him to be really evil. Like, I understand that he's not that nice and that he probably has a nefarious plan, but I really love him and I love his moments of vulnerability, and so I really need him to be not a full-on nemesis and, you know, just being around to sass people. I just, oh yeah. Come on. Come on, Peter. Anyway.
Yeah, so Peter wasn't the only one with something up his sleeve this time. Chris kind of tricks Isaac and Allison into going into the bank vault. He, like, tasers poor Isaac and then slaps handcuffs on Allison and allows himself to be taken by Jennifer. And this scene was so frustrating, but at the same time, I really loved it because Chris was, you know, I mean, it sucks that he had to be taken, but he was doing it hopefully to get closer to the situation to see if he could help out. But at the same time, like, was that really the smartest way to go about it?
I mean, yeah, it was nice that he was being protective, and I still can't, like, number one, I love that, like, the thing with the, like, the taser gun thing, and he was like, don't you usually use those on werewolves? And he's like, yep. And number one, mean. Number two, he really seems to care about Isaac. Chris really seems to care about Isaac. And it might just be, like, again, like, that if these people came into his life at this time, he would have cared about Scott this much. But he really likes Isaac. And I am very interested in that. Because I think the Isaac and Allison thing has been so well done. Like, I've actually never seen the build-up of a relationship done as well, like, as subtly, if you know what I mean. And, like, I don't know what's going on exactly. Like, obviously, we're going to get a bit more of this later, but, like, I don't know if it's meant to be that they actually have something going on off-screen or if it's just, like, a lead-up that they haven't admitted to yet. But it's not a single word, not one word has been uttered about it in the show until that thing at the end with the baths. And even then, it wasn't even said, but you know everything without a single word being said. Like, oh, I secretly like this guy. Or, oh, what's going on between us? You know, I've never seen a relationship done so well just by vibes, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been brilliant.
Absolutely. It's frustrating for me because I love Allison and Scott together. I think they're endgame. I think they are going to get back together. And, you know, in season 10, when Teen Wolf finally ends, they're going to get married and have babies. And, you know, everything's going to be perfect and happily ever after. But I really love Isaac. And I actually kind of really like Allison and Isaac together. I don't mind it at all. And so I'm like really torn. So maybe they should just do that polyamorous thing where they all get together and do things.
Be happy. Yeah. It just really, I'm trying to think of another, like, usually when this kind of thing happens, you see more, like, you hear more, or, like, there's a sneaky kiss, and it's like, oh, my God, or there's someone says something, or someone slips, and it's, you know, it's made obvious in some way, and this is just being done so beautifully without a word, and I just can't, the fact that they're able to do that just makes me love it so much more, but... Regardless, Chris, I think, is pro-Isaac, and, you know, I enjoyed Isaac showing up at their place and his whole, like, oh, I can't use a gun, but I'm getting pretty good with these. That's another thing about Isaac that I've been quite interested in the last few episodes, his sort of admission that he's sort of still a werewolf in training. Like, a few episodes ago, they, you know, they were asking something about, you know, the scent, and he was like, oh, I'm not sure what direction it came from. I'm not that good at this yet, and stuff like that. And so that kind of stuff I kind of like. But regardless, Chris himself sort of choosing to be taken, it was a bit nasty of him to lock them up, but oh well.
I thought I just took it as it just had to be done. And if Chris had done it in a different way, it wouldn't have worked out so beautifully perfect the way it happened in the bank vault. And to have Chris look at Allison like, look, I'll be fine. I have to do this. But then there was also, I think he also was looking at Isaac a little bit on the floor, like, you know, I'm sorry I had to do this, but this is what has to be done. And then to see Allison and Isaac together holding each other in that embrace is like, well, wait a minute. Okay, I like Scott and Allison, but, you know, Isaac, you better be careful. That's your bro, man.
Yeah, it's such an awkward situation. It's so difficult. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's... But, yeah, and so it really interests me that they've chosen to go... that way. I never would have thought of it, like, in last season or anything like that. I never would have thought of it. And, and literally not one word has been said between the two of them about their relationship. And it just makes me wonder if... Because Teen Wolf has had stuff happen off screen. You know, it's had, you know, we know that, what, like, Scott was doing that whole thing of Gerard off screen and we didn't see it. Like, and I don't know if it's meant to be at the moment that Allison and Isaac... you know, when the cameras are turned off, are already together and that they're just not telling anyone about it and what we're seeing is little tiny bits. But it just kills me. But we shall see, I suppose. But regardless of that, you know, Styles goes to get Lydia, like, while they're off, you know, while Chris is off pretending to hunt the Durak and actually letting himself be hunted by the Durak, Styles is off to get Lydia at her house. And we had that moment where Lydia kind of realizes that Jennifer tried to kill her before she realized that Lydia was a banshee and that it was like a surprise. So why was Jennifer trying to kill Lydia? Like, what about what she knew or whatever was she trying to kill Lydia for? Was it because she saw her drawing the Nemeton, or what do you think it was?
I'm still looking at it as, okay, now we finally know what Lydia is. She's a banshee, but could she also be what Jennifer used to be, in a mercenary?
Yeah. I mean,
maybe that was why she was trying to kill her.
Yeah, I mean, I think Lydia has the potential to be an emissary. We obviously don't know if it's something that people, like, have natural power or if you have to, like, choose to go train to be one or something like that. And you know, maybe it doesn't matter whether she's a banshee or not, that just the fact that she had the knowledge and was doing those things, like, regardless of why, like, but it seemed to be, you know, the way that this has been set up, like, oh, we have to find out why she wanted to kill me if it wasn't just because she found out I was a banshee. Karen, yeah. Did you get anything?
Yeah, well, first of all, with the emissaries, I see a lot of people going around and saying, oh, maybe Styles is, you know, the next emissary or something like that. Maybe he's Scott's emissary. And, you know, that's definitely a possibility, I think. But, I mean, the emissaries are essentially druids, and I feel like you aren't necessarily born as a druid, that you kind of have to, like, study the mythology and, you know, what, like, the mountain ash does and all these different, yeah, like, magical herbs, yeah, and stuff. And so I just have a really hard time thinking that, like, either Styles or Lydia are just, oh, you know, congratulations, you're an emissary and you didn't know it. That just seems kind of far-fetched to me. So I think that the whole thing with Lydia and why Jennifer wanted to kill her goes back to the fact that Lydia was drawing the Nemeton and that she knew it probably all came down to the tree. And I don't know, maybe there's even more in there about what possibly they, what information they could get out of those drawings or kind of draw out of Lydia because of her powers. And I think essentially that's why Jennifer wanted her dead.
Yeah, I mean, if she always knew that her final sacrifice had to be done at the Nemeton, then maybe, yeah, maybe that was it. Because she did see that she was drawing a tree in the class. Like, we had her notice that and point it out. So, interesting.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff.
So then we segue into the scene that absolutely destroyed me, and this one, no amount of ice cream was going to fix me. I tried and it didn't work, but this is when Styles has the panic attack. And, you know, eventually Lydia kisses him in order to kind of distract him. He holds his breath and the panic attack goes away. But just how amazingly was that shot with the slow-mo and then going fast and the spinning camera and everything, and even just, like, Dylan acting that scene out. Like, I was trying to have a panic attack with him. It just felt so real.
I didn't necessarily know that he was going to have a panic attack, but I sort of saw it going there, like, as it started to happen. But when he read out the text to Lydia about Chris being taken, that, you know, that Jennifer now has all three and so that his dad was in immediate danger, I was like, I don't know how they've done that. I don't know if they've done that on a computer or if this is something that you can, like, do with, like, stop and do with makeup, or if this is literally him. But I saw, like, the color drain out of his face. Like, I was not imagining it. Like, I saw him go that, like make himself go, like, pallid and white and sick. And I do not know how they did it or if he can do that to himself, but I just died. It was just, like, I've never seen someone, like, physically change themselves like that. And it's just crazy.
Yeah. He did a great job in that scene, too.
And then just with the whole panic attack, when it started to get bad and sort of Lydia being the one to help him, I mean, after the kiss, I'm wondering about what she thinks about him now. Like, if you know what I mean, that she, what she...
Yeah.
I'm not wondering what he feels about her. I think he's sort of still at the same place. And I think that he was very overwhelmed, but I'm really wondering what she thinks about him, because she was like, I don't know, the way that she looked at him was very, like, wondrous, like, seeing him differently, and also she was sort of nearly crying, and I think that she loves him now. I genuinely do.
I mean, I think she took notice of him. She was really surprised when she pulled back from that kiss. You could just, like you said, the wonderment in her eyes, you could just see it. She was surprised, and I don't think she was feeling too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she was all sort of coy afterwards, and then he was like, oh. And he was, I think he was in shock for a few reasons, you know, but I don't think it was necessarily in his head that, like, oh, this is the best moment of my life or anything like that, because it clearly wasn't. But, you know, I think it obviously meant a lot to him that he realized that she'd done that for him. But I think that her feelings are pretty important about this right now. So,
yeah.
I loved the awkward moment afterwards when she punches him in the knee.
Yes.
Oh my god. Did you guys catch it?
Yes.
I did.
It was so cute. It was beautiful. Like it was a beautiful moment, whether it goes somewhere or not. Like it was whether it goes somewhere or not, it's really nice. And again, it's a credit to the show in that people, you know, in season one were kind of like, oh, I want Styles to get Lydia because I want him to win. And then, you know, everyone was a bit like, oh, but Lydia and Jackson is so meaningful now, and I don't want Styles to get Lydia just for the sake of it because Steric or because, you know, it's, you know what, now she's going to settle for him and stuff. But now it feels good. Now it feels like they're both really changed as people and that they could come together in a way that would be really amazing. And it didn't feel like, you know, it didn't feel like, oh, I'm doing this because I have to, like, pity, you know, or something like that. You know, like, I mean, obviously she was trying to help him, but.
Yeah.
You know, though it felt like, I don't know, it felt right. Yeah.
It was genuine. And then she treats him a lot better than she did in the past two seasons too.
Yeah.
You know, she needs him. She really does need him. And then after that kiss, you could just tell like, oh man, this is what it would be like
if
we were together. But if I take, then I look at Styles like, well, wow, it took me to have a panic attack to have this girl finally kiss me, and it's like, oh, okay. I think it's for them to be together, I think personally it's a little too late, but hey, you know, you never know.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good point, and I think that that's a big thing about it, like on Styles' perspective, that it's like what I said about Jackson, it's, I really want to make a comparison, but it's, okay, I'm going to make a comparison from this to the Buffy season 8 canonical comic book series. If anyone has read that, if anyone has not read that, this is going to be a slight spoiler, but it is the canon season 8 of Buffy, produced by Joss Whedon as a comic book series. Basically, in this series, Buffy at one point hooks up with a girl. It does not last. She does not decide that she's gay. But then later, she kind of decides that maybe, because no one else has ever stood by her, that she'd actually quite like to go try and be with Xander. And Xander's like, no, maybe a few years ago this would have been the best thing that had ever happened to me, but you went, he literally goes, you went, he was like, what? So I was kind of like last on your list of options. You went through gay to me, like, and it was just really, and I'm just wondering if that's kind of like where Styles would be. It's like, you went through evil werewolf to me, like, if you know what I mean, and he'd have to understand that she changed, like, it's not just, you know, that they would, that they'd both changed and that they both understood each other better now and probably didn't know each other if they were going to happen. Like, because I think that where his head would be at, if he's still thinking about her as the person she was, that he'd be like, right, so you went through Kanema, evil werewolf.
Yeah.
Me. Thanks.
Yeah.
Like, thanks a lot. Like, you know, it would have to be understood that the situation is now different and that they've come to see each other differently.
Yeah.
I think if they were going to fall in love now, it would not be, it sounds a bit weird, but it wouldn't be to do with Styles' past crush. I mean, Styles has always really cared about Lydia, you know, but without really knowing her. It would almost have to erase their past histories and going from, like, who they are to each other now. And I don't know if that'll happen or not, but yeah.
That's a good comparison.
Yeah.
So then we segue into Chantel's scene, and everybody is calling you the sass master, Chantel, because you really gave it to Lydia and Styles. What was it like shooting this scene?
Well, first, it was great working with Holland for the first time, and she's just awesome. And then working with Dylan, of course, he's just awesome. He's just amazing. And then to have it done in the guidance counselor's office, I felt really honored because a lot of good scenes happened in there. You know, Styles last season when she was talking,
right.
And then Scott this season when he was asking, you know, about Deucalion and everything. So for me to be able to sit in that chair and to be in where great things have happened, I was just really excited. I was really grateful for it. Really, really grateful.
It was a really cool scene. I mean, one of the quotes I almost picked was your line, but I thought that might be weird about the you know, just when he was like, "Oh, you were Heather's best friend," and Danielle says, "Yeah, I was Heather's best friend. We've been working on that issue 3 times a week," which was really nicely done in like a, you know, and I would be saying this regardless of whether you were here or not, but yeah, really nicely done in the kind of like, you can tell the character's personality, you know, and that kind of like sass and manner of speaking. You can tell a lot about the character's personality, and that kind of attitude is still injected into the line, even though it's really depressing kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it was really, yeah, it was really, really well done. But I enjoyed the scene a lot. It was great. And it was, you know, again, quite long. And we said this about when they had Jeremiah come on, and his scene kind of, drove the plot. You know, it wasn't just a little handout, like, oh, here you go, here's a pointless little walk-on thing that's not going to affect anything. It drove the plot, and as did this scene, and it was just, it's just really cool and really nicely done that they sort of care about making every scene count, really.
Yeah, well, thank you. That was really sweet. and then it was also cool to see Danielle at Beacon Hill, because it made sense to go to Morel because she's one of the top guidance counselors ever.
Yeah.
In Beacon Hills, probably, because she knows what she's doing. And I really do believe that Danielle just had to leave her old school, because everywhere she probably went with Heather, you know, they probably shared a locker together. The lunch table was getting too big for her. Every inch of that old high school was full of Heather. So she made a transfer to Beacon Hill to talk to Miss Morel, and she's been there 3 times a week. So I thought that was really cool for her to end up there at the school.
Yeah. And so, you know, it obviously leaves it open for you to come around a bit more if you should so be invited or want to.
hopefully, yes, she can come back, and I'm really hoping that Danielle has a scene with Danny.
Yeah, I mean, it is like, it's like, you know, because there's not that many, like, side characters in the show. There's, like, you know, a lot of shows have, like, little characters, like, you know, that just pop up every now and then, like, you know, on Glee they have, like, you know, Jacob Ben Israel, or, you know, random students who aren't the main group that, you know. Teen Wolf doesn't have that much. It has the main group, and it has, like, Danny, and then it has, like, Greenberg that doesn't exist. So so it would be cool to see, like, a few more people, like, around the school that we sort of get to know, and those characters always have the potential to, like, grow into plot lines. So that would be a really cool opportunity, I think.
Yeah. Here's hoping.
So, I mean, was that scene as well, like, sort of exactly how it looked, in the sense that did they have all of those like drawings of the Nematon, and like was there anything like weird about shooting the scene, like, you know, the order that it was done, or like something strange about the setup, or was it very sort of realistically done?
Well, the notebook was full of trees, and Dylan would go through the pages, but he wouldn't actually turn the pages. They had a lot of camera setups where one shot would be on me, and then it would be the camera would be in front of me, then the camera would be on the side, then the camera would be on the other side, and they did an aerial shot, and it was much longer, but it was really cool to look at, just to see them position the cameras in a certain way, and then they would have me say my line, but they wouldn't show me on camera because it was Dylan and Holland's turn. And then they would say their line, and then the camera would be on me. So it wasn't really weird, but it was really cool to finally do some more camera shots.
It's cool. Cool, and I hope you get to go back. Who do you think Danielle would most like to be friends with at Beacon Hills? Not you, her.
I would say Styles, because everywhere she is, he's always there.
Yeah, truth. She's like, who is this kid?
So it would be him, and then Danny. Oh, Danny with an I, and then Danny with a Y. Come on.
Yeah, it could be like a magical duo of, like, happiness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Do you ever just wake up and go, this is my real life. I'm on Teen
Yes.
Wolf.
Yes. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I really can't believe it sometimes because I'm still a fan, and to be on the show and working with your favorite actors and actresses and seeing the MTV staff work hard and seeing the crew, you know, being so nice to you, and it's really cool. But I'm glad you guys enjoyed the scene because that scene was really fun. I'm glad it was a little bit longer too. So.
Yeah. I would like to see you have a scene with Orny, with the coach. I think that they would yell
oh
at each other.
Oh my god! Yes!
That's
yes.
Awesome!
Yes!
So yes. Maybe she can show up in the Scott's economics class next semester.
Yeah.
Do some sassing in the classroom.
Maybe she can date Greenberg.
Yeah! And Orny could be like, you're Greenberg's girlfriend? What the hell is wrong with you? Why the hell would you do that? Link, you're too good for him.
Like, he bought me a churro and then it was all set. So.
Okay, we need to get this to Jeff. This has to happen now.
Just like quietly forward the link to the podcast. Oops, didn't mean to do that to send all Teen Wolf crew here. Just, oh, what a shame. Oh, well, maybe you should just look at it for some ideas. Anyway, as we discussed already, I guess, they realize in that sort of moment of clarity that Lydia's drawings have been exactly the same, like not just trees. They've been the same pattern exactly, and that Styles turns it upside down and realizes that it may be a root system instead of trees, and that he realizes he knows where the others are in the root cellar that was the sacrificial place that, you know, Derek had gone to kill Paige. I mean, they didn't know at this point, Styles and Derek and all of those people, they don't know that. Oh no, they do. I'm like, hang on, they don't know. They know about, I'm getting into that situation where I don't remember who knows what. Does Styles and that know that that place is a nematon? Like, do they know that it's a sacrificial place? Derek does. Because Jennifer told him the whole story about how she brought Paige back to life. Does everyone now know that? Like, is that that happened when they were trapped in the elevator? Like, does everyone know the story now? Like, how did? Because Styles said to Lydia, "I'll go and tell them it's the nematon. They'll know what it is." Did he say root cellar?
He said root cellar.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe he doesn't know it's a sacrificial place then, because I'm getting confused, you know what I mean, about who knows what? Because Derek knows that it's a druid, like a nematon, like sacrificial place. And yeah. Styles knows the story about Paige, but they don't necessarily know it's the druid sacrificial spot, do they? Because otherwise they would have thought, oh, hang on, maybe she's got them in the druid sacrificial spot. Like, that would have been a logical leap for them to make. So I'm getting a bit confused.
I don't think Scott knows what a nematon is, but I do know Styles knows about it because Peter told him the story in episode 8 about Paige.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. They just know it's a place, a root cellar. They don't know it's a connection to the druids, right? Styles.
Yeah.
Peter and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So they work that out. And, well, not that it's a druid place, because what I'm thinking is if they knew it was a druid sacrificial spot, that would have been the first place they'd looked. And then Lydia, you know, Styles sends Lydia to go tell Derek, and she goes to the loft. And I'd feel a bit awkward about going over to Derek's place if I was Lydia. They have kind of a weird connection. But she goes over to the loft, and it's Peter who answers the door. So that happened. Again,
I loved that.
Yeah, it was amazing. Peter, again, I didn't realize Lydia hadn't sort of dealt with Peter since he's come back from death. And it was another moment, like with Melissa, where he seemed really ashamed. Like and it's just such a weird contrast to like how he'd been all like Disney villain earlier in the episode. Like that he actually was like, oh, yeah, I screwed you over, oops, kind of thing. And a lot of people were a bit disappointed. They were hoping for, like, more of a confrontation between Lydia and Peter, and I don't know if there was, like, a scene that was cut or if there's, like, more coming, but, I mean, did you feel it was, like, enough of a kind of, oh, this is what happened, or did you want more from that?
There was actually Peter, in the script that I got, Peter did say an extra line where it, I guess, well, the episode's done. I guess I can tell you guys what he said.
Yeah, I think it's already sort of been sort of pretty well established that there was, like, some editing done there, like, that it was, like, a cut scene.
Yeah, what he said was, what Peter said after Derek, we have a visit, he said, this awkward reunion thing is turning into a bad habit.
Oh, yeah, okay, I get it, like, because of Melissa and everything, so, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but I thought seeing Lydia, though, just being, oh, it's you, but then when she said, you've done this to me, her face was just more of, yeah, I'm pissed, but I can't deal with you right now. There's something going on.
Yeah.
I have to figure it out.
Yeah, she was a lot stronger than him. He looked really, awkward and embarrassed. And I'm just like, yeah, you should be embarrassed, Peter, you terrible man. Especially since they've, like, hooked up, like, you know, like him and her and the young Peter Hale.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, it's so weird.
They shared so much together, and it had to come out the way it did. Mm. Like, geez.
So then after this, we basically learn that Talia took the memories from Peter and Derek about the Nemeton. And I don't know if you guys caught it, but Peter said there were multiple, I don't remember exactly the word that he used.
Bad memories there or something, like, not just, like, a bad occurrence. Like, he was like...
Yeah, there was more than one. And I was like, so... what else happened there? Because as far as I know, the only thing that we've actually seen was Paige.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, they hid out there for 2 days, probably, like, starving while the hunters, like, look for them. So, but I don't know either. But I actually really loved this plot twist. I mean, it was inconvenient, obviously, that they weren't like, to the Nemeton, we know where that is. But I was like, that makes sense. That's, like, a good thing. But... I mean, Talia, if she was going to take the memory of the location, why, like, I mean, it would be a bit difficult to take memory of the whole thing, but, like, surely the emotional damage will still be there of Derek having to, like, you know, cut his girlfriend through the back and kill her. But maybe it's, like, she didn't want them to, like, go there and wallow, or maybe Peter had been doing, like, ritual sacrifices on cats or something, and that, like, you know, and maybe like Peter was training to be like an evil druid himself, and that Talia was like, none of that, Peter.
Yeah, but then I thought it was also really, it something caught my attention when they cut back to Talia. She put her claws in, I guess it was either Derek's neck, but then when we in episode, I think it was episode 2. Of this season, when Peter was retrieving memories from Isaac, he put his claws in the back of his neck, too.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know exactly how the memory sharing works at this point. Like, they've talked about it a couple of times, like, that it's like, yeah, they put the claws in, I guess, the neck, and I don't know how you control it. But also another little thing I noticed was they said that Talia was Peter's older sister. So she's Talia Hale, and then Derek has his, that means Derek has his mother's name, not his father's name. So we don't know how werewolf families work. Maybe they, like, take the name of the alpha of the family, or maybe Derek's father was a human, or maybe Derek doesn't know who his father is, or but people were wondering about that, like, about the relationships, like, if Talia was the alpha and then Peter was a Hale and Derek was a Hale, like, how, what were the connections? But yeah, I mean, yeah, so who do you think Derek's father is?
Oh, man.
Well, oh, jeez. I was not the FBI agent, so I Wow, that's a good question. Wow.
Yeah, I have a feeling it's somebody that, you know, we haven't seen before, obviously. I don't think they're really characters. Uh-oh.
What if it's Dean?
It's not Deaton. Deaton's not white. Derek is white, very white.
But come on, now, what if it is him, though?
What if it's Deucalion?
What if it's Deucalion? Oh, my God.
No, it's Star Wars.
He looked mega impressed by Talia, so anyway.
Wow. There, we called it. It's Deucalion.
I mean, okay. Derek's had a lot of brothers and sisters. You know, we don't know if they're all from the same father or how wolf packs work. But anyway, I now feel a desperate need to know. So,
yeah. As a paternity test coming on the show, so we got to call Maury Povich.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
okay.
Wow, that's a good
question. Anyway, speaking of DN/Morale, how'd you like that segue? Morale was pretty awesome in the end of this episode. I'm not the hugest fan of Morale because I think she's, like, really shady, but I really enjoyed her here, and I think this is the first time that we actually got to see her motivations. And I was like, okay, maybe she's not as bad of a guy as, you know, we thought she was initially, but I know it's, like, really unlikely the way that she threw up that mountain ash and it formed this, like, perfectly circular ring around her, but it looked so awesome that I don't even care.
I think it's, like, yeah, like, clearly they have some sort of, like, manipulative magic. Like, they're not just, they don't just use, they have something they can do, some power, some spark, you know. Maybe, yeah, someone should teach that trick to Styles so he doesn't have to, like, drag it around in a garbage bag.
Oh man. And then when you look at Morel and Deaton, look at them as they've been in this game for a long time. So they obviously know the ins and outs of Mountain Ash and Mistletoe, and with Morel, she knew that she was gonna get hunted. She knew it.
Yeah. See, she has a little utility belt of tools on her at all time. This is what Styles needs. We've been talking about how Styles can defend himself, like, and, you know, Allison's got weapons and stuff, but Styles isn't really weapony, and he should have a little belt of, like, little different magic things that he can use to, like, throw out little magic bombs like this, and see, this is a perfect example.
He needs something.
Yeah, I mean, so she's claimed that she's always tried to maintain balance, which is, like, I don't know, apparently that's true, like, that she's sort of been, helping the others along the way, that she sent the girl to help Isaac out of the place, like, so, I mean, is that girl another member of her, like, druid family, do we think that, or the girl at the beginning of the season, played by Megan Tandy, and who they said was called Brayden, is she another member of her, druid family or whatever? And I mean, once again, I mean, I don't love what Deucalion's done, but, like, is he, like, so super bad, like, that she needs to maintain balance from him? Mm. Like, what has he, we don't know that he goes around the world killing people, but then again, we don't know exactly what his end game is either, that he's, like, you know, she says he's obsessed with, like, perfection, like, the perfect pack or whatever, but, like, so what? Like, I mean, it's not great, but are the werewolf packs really not, like, do any killing? Is everyone pretty peaceful except for him? Like, I don't really understand what's his thing is.
I think it's going to go back to the fact that he's the demon wolf, because we still don't really know what that means, but we know that it's that Jennifer is sacrificing all these people just to be able to have enough power to fight him. I mean, he's pretty specifically says that in the promo for 312.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking that, we just don't know the extent to which he has gotten to the place where he is right now, and I think, you know, hopefully that's going to be answered in the next episode, and we're finally going to figure out what the heck a demon wolf is exactly.
Ew. Yeah.
I do believe that she is keeping balance, though, because she reminds me of, I'm reading this series called The Black Dagger Brotherhood, and everyone, don't get mad, it's a vampire series.
You're allowed.
I'm sorry. It's a really, thank you, it's a really good series. And there's this lady called the Scribe Virgin, and she's like the vampire's god in a way, but she's not really god. But she keeps the balance. So if someone dies and this person comes back, she has to to do something to make sure that the balance is always equal. So with Morel, I honestly believe that she is keeping balance, because if she has to go, then that means probably Deaton has to pick up where she left off.
So we
really don't know, like, what's her plan, because she obviously has a plan.
Yeah. No, I do get what you mean. I think that, you know, she's probably stuck where she is. It's not exactly something she chose, so, yeah.
Then Morel informs Cully and the twins that Deucalion was the one that killed Ennis, and I was really grateful that this scene found its way in here, because I really wanted Cully mostly to learn Deucalion isn't all that he says he is, that he's manipulating them too. And I just really wonder what sort of impact this is going to have on her relationship and the twins' relationship with Deucalion, because I think Cully is going to be biding her time. It's very clear that she had pretty strong feelings for Ennis, and I don't think she's going to let this slide.
Yeah, neither. And I mean, I'm thinking about, like, next week, right, when there's a lunar eclipse. And none of them are going to have werewolf powers. Carly's a pretty ruthless killer, and Deucalion is, without powers, a blind, middle-aged man. And I'm wondering if she would potentially try and kill him as humans, if you know what I mean, like, without using her werewolf strength, just using her human strength or something like that, because she probably could.
Yeah. She's my favorite alpha. She really is.
Yeah, I've come to really like her. I've come to really enjoy her, and
especially after that backstory, like, it just gave her this emotional depth that I wasn't expecting, and I really loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good seeing, like, a monster being vulnerable, and you're like, oh, wait a minute, she has feelings? Oh, she loves her? She loved Julia / Jennifer? Are you, what?
Yeah, I mean, that was something that, like, we were talking about, like, that, you know, now pretty much everyone, I mean, including Deucalion as well, pretty much everyone except Gerard Argent has, like, a backstory that means they could have some sort of redemption arc, like, that we've seen something about their very important baby feelings, if you know what I mean. So, and, you know, that includes her, that includes, like, Deucalion, how he used to be, like, a super pacifist, and, like, Gerard stabbed out his eyes. It includes all sorts of things. So yeah, it's interesting to see. Cully could definitely potentially be around as a sort of redeemed character if she makes it through.
My favorite part of this scene, though, was when Scott actually stopped Cully and the twins from attacking Morel. I cannot even begin to tell you how it was just amazing, because Scott didn't yell at them. His eyes didn't glow. They didn't turn red or anything like that. He just said, stop. And they stopped dead in their tracks. And I mean, these are three alphas that could have clearly taken out Scott and Morel, but didn't. They listened to Scott. And I just think, you know, that's the point. Their loyalties are starting to turn, and Deucalion isn't, you know, their alfalfa anymore. Like, Scott's, they're definitely starting to respect Scott.
Now Scott's going to be the alfalfa, because he's the true alpha. Maybe a true alpha can literally control any other werewolf.
I don't even think it was that, though. Like, I don't think there was anything supernatural about it or any sort of controlling mechanism that he had going on. I think that they just listened to him, listened to Scott the person, and I think that was the most amazing thing about it.
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah, because seeing Scott in this season, you just see Scott different from where he was two seasons ago. Because I honestly think if all this happened two seasons ago, the show would be over. Everyone would be dead. And the show would be done. But all of this, all of the things that are happening to him and to Styles and to Allison and to everyone, it makes sense for them to have it happen right now where they at in their lives right now. So when Scott, because I still go back to when he's talking to Isaac. Isaac literally listens to him, and I truly believe that whether it happens or not, Isaac is going to switch packs, because the Peck thing still bothers me because Peter bit Scott. So Peter is Scott's alpha. But when he died, does that mean that Scott's own alpha, which makes him a true alpha? Does that make sense?
Yeah, kind
of. It does, but his eyes aren't red, so I don't think that he's technically an alpha. I mean, perhaps he's just an omega, because he's made it pretty clear that he doesn't necessarily go along with everything that, like, Derek has said and stuff, and he's made it very clear in the past that he doesn't want to be a part of Derek's pack. And so I don't think that he had an alpha. I think he's been an omega for a long time.
I don't really know either. Like, I don't know. It's always confused me because I kind of think that he is in Derek's pack, but he kind of keeps denying it. But again, we still don't know what makes someone be in your pack. Like, what, whether it's, you know, whether it is actually a choice or not. And, I mean, regardless, you know, if he becomes an alfalfa, if he becomes a true alpha, I think that he's probably going to have, now Derek's not even an alpha himself. I think he's going to have some stuff to deal with, Scott, if he becomes an alpha himself.
Yeah.
So switching gears here, we get that scene between Melissa, Chris, and Sheriff Stilinski down in the root cellar. And basically we find out that Melissa told the sheriff everything, and that was kind of cute how she smiled at Chris, and she's like, yeah, I kind of had to tell him, and the sheriff was like, yeah, I was starting to feel a little bit left out. I thought that was pretty funny. But then we kind of find out that, you know, maybe he did know things all along, kind of. I mean, he didn't want to believe, and we get that backstory about Claudia, his wife, and how he was with the girl in the car accident, and Styles was with his mother as she died. And because Sheriff Stilinski didn't believe the girl, he didn't go back to the hospital and was with his wife when she died. And this was just a really emotional scene all around, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's like, number one, like, who was the girl in the car? Number two, like, do car crashes kill werewolves?
See, I don't think she was a werewolf. I almost want to say, isn't Lydia supposed to have a sister? I wonder if she had a sister, and maybe this was a Martin.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very confused. Do we know for sure that, did he say that the girl in the car died? Like, everyone was like, oh, she knew she was going to die, but did we actually confirm that she actually did die? And, like, how would that...
Yeah.
Yeah, they confirmed that she did die?
Yeah.
She died.
Because the sheriff said he stayed with her until the moment that she died, and that's why he didn't go. Mm-hmm. And I think he was talking about, like, the paramedics and stuff like that, too.
Yeah, okay. I'm a little bit confused then about, why this was the thing that meant that, like... I mean, I guess it means, oh, supernatural stuff is real, you know, but werewolves in general, like, you know, obviously he hadn't seen enough to believe that.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it was very horrible to get that backstory about, you know, Styles' mother.
Yeah.
And just him being alone with his mother while died.
Yeah, and he would have been like 8 or 9 if he's like 16 or 17 now, because they said this was 8 years ago. So that's no wonder he has panic attacks.
Yeah.
Poor Styles.
I know.
Poor everybody.
Know. Poor everybody. Poor everybody.
Sad show.
Poor everybody.
So then let's talk about some sacrificial suicide, guys.
Cool.
This seems
Oh, God.
So basically, Dean comes up with this brilliant idea of killing these three teenagers, having them kill themselves in this ice water. And it's basically going to make them the surrogate sacrifices for their parents. So Allison, Scott and Styles have to do this. And what happens is that it will give power to the Nemeton, which will act like a beacon to other supernatural beings around Beacon Hills and, you know, maybe the state, maybe the country. And this is where the line, one of my favorite lines came from with, you know, you haven't seen anything yet. And the other thing that will happen to the three of them is that they will have a darkness around their hearts for the rest of their lives. They won't be able to see it, but they'll be able to feel it. They'll never be the same. And a lot of people are wondering if this means that Scott won't be able to become a true alpha since he has that darkness in his heart. And I was just wondering what you guys thought about that.
Oh, I hadn't thought about it yet, but I... Oh, that's... I mean, I'm wondering if it more means something like depression or something like that.
Well, I think that the darkness around their hearts for the rest of their lives, when he said that, it's like, well, okay, thanks, Dr. D, for telling me this, and thanks for telling me this as I'm about to die in this little pool of ice and mistletoe and everything. But I'm glad that he told the kids in a way that was grown up, because with all the things that they've been going through, they're not teenagers anymore. They're more like young adults. So the way he told them was like, look, you do this, you're gonna have some baggage that's gonna come along with it. And I thought it was also funny, it's not funny, but Beacon Hills is a beacon. So Beacon Hills is, so the hill is a beacon, basically.
Right, yeah. And I think that is just, it's going to be so interesting. I'm so excited for the second half of season three. I'm excited for, hopefully they'll get season four and beyond. And I think that this is, you know, it's funny because in a lot of TV shows where they have like Monster of the Week episodes, or even TV shows where they don't, where they have like the big bads of the season or whatever, you know, they don't always have a really solid reason for these creatures coming to them. Like Supernatural, you would think, I mean, I love Supernatural, but after a while you would think that people would kind of know that like all these demons and stuff exist because they're literally everywhere. And I think that, and they just, you know, happen to show up in these places. But I think, you know, Teen Wolf is doing a lot of what Buffy did in giving a very logical reason as to why these creatures are going to show up in Beacon Hills. And I'm just so excited because I think that it's really smart and it makes sense and it's realistic, and it's going to be really cool to see what ends up showing up at their doorstep.
Yeah. For like 3B, I keep reading all the spoilers, and I guess you said it's a Kitson mythology or something. I've never heard of it though, but I'm glad that
Kitsune, the Japanese.
Yes. I've never heard of that mythology before.
Oh, it's gonna be so good.
I'm really excited to see that play out in Beacon Hills. And for I think Scott's gonna be a true alpha no matter what. And just this stuff that's happening, like the darkness over his heart, I think that's just, it's just going to come with it. I think he's still going to be a true alpha, though. He's destined for something.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I think he's going to be a true alpha, too. And it, I mean, I get the whole darkness around the heart thing and why people would think that this might mean he's not going to be a true alpha. But if you think about it, he's literally killing himself in order to save his mother. I mean, that's not exactly a bad thing to do. That's very noble. And I think, you know, that's the whole point of the true alpha. You do it of your own willpower. It's not out of, you know, violence or, you know, power hunger or, you know, being bloodthirsty or anything. It's in your heart. And this is a very true reason for doing that. And I don't think it's going to affect him as a true alpha at all.
Yeah, me either.
I potentially think it means like some sort of, I don't think darkness like evil, I think darkness like depression-y kind of thing, like potentially that they'll just not feel right forever potentially, but hopefully we'll maybe battle a way to overcome that as part of the next season or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Definitely. So then we get this sort of awkward, sort of funny, sort of really heartbreaking scene where basically Deaton tells Lydia to be the one to push Stiles under the water and to bring him back. Deaton is obviously going to go with Scott because he has a pretty strong connection with him. I mean, he's his boss. He's been around a lot. He's sort of like a mentor. And then we have Isaac being with Allison and the look on Scott's face. Yeah, of just, it was so painful to watch because you can see that Allison and Isaac have this connection, and Scott's just trying to move on and be like, all right, let's just do this. Let's just get it over with. Okay, let's.
Yeah, I mean, it really, like, the whole thing was like, you know, they mentioned the connection thing, and then kind of like Lydia and Allison, they look at each other being like, oh, BFF girlfriends. They kind of give each other this little look of like, oh, obviously we'll, you know, obviously we'll go together, even though we've barely seen like Lydia and Allison interact this season. The way Deaton said it was kind of mean as well. I mean, I know he was trying to be practical, because he clearly knows everything, Deaton, but he was also kind of like, Lydia, you go with Styles. And he knew exactly what he meant when he was saying it. And the look on his face was kind of like, Allison and Isaac, I don't approve of you hurting my little baby Scott, but this is what we've got going, so we're going to have to do it. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah. This is just payback.
Yeah, it was like, really, it was really kind of like, yeah, he almost was calling them out. And it was like, I mean, it was obviously, this is who we have to work with right now. And so the best person is going to have to go with the best person. It was practical, but he could have been gentler about it. You know, he could have been like, Lydia, you know, it just the way he said it was almost snappish. And it wasn't like, you know, it was snappish at Lydia, not at Lydia, because it's not her fault. But he was talking about Lydia, but he was taught the snappiness was sort of at the whole room. And obviously, and Allison, I mean, Allison was really trying to cover it up. Like, she was trying to pretend that it wasn't happening, because she was like, are you sure about that? Because, like, Scott and I both need to go under, because otherwise we'd be the ones to hold each other down, you know, kind of thing. Like, she says that, you know, she didn't, that was a longer version of, but, you know, that's what she meant when she was like, oh, but Scott and I both have to go under. And Deaton gives her this look like, girl, don't even play. Like, you know, and it's, you know, and that again makes me wonder, like, because I think that that sentence of Allison sounded fake, not like fake, but it was kind of like she was trying to cover up the Isaac thing. So it's clearly acknowledged, like, it's clearly, whether they actually have secretly been, like, together on the side, or whether it's something that they haven't admitted to yet, she knows. Like, it's not like, oh my god, Isaac and I have a secret connection, that's what's happening. Like, you know, she knew that this was a thing, and they both look guilty, you know, and it was just beautifully done. Like, it was the best wordless moment I've ever seen in a TV show. It was so well done. And Scott's face, yeah, I mean, it broke my heart, because he was clearly heartbroken, but he was like, right, guess this is the thing then. Gonna have to do this. We really have bigger things to deal with, but holy crap. Like, he was really broken by it, and oh, it was awful. I don't know what I want anymore, because it was so awful.
He was really mature about it too, though, which I really appreciated. I don't think season one Scott would have acted like that.
No, he probably would have thrown down and been like, what? You know, like, you know, what on earth is going on here? You know, yeah.
No, and I saw this cool thing on Tumblr where someone was matching them up, and with Scott, it said with Deaton, and it was just said more of it has to have a connection with someone. Yes, Deaton is his boss, but it was more of that, like, fatherly figure type.
Yeah.
That
yes.
Needed. So I did like that pairing, and then with Lydia and Styles, I was like, ah, yeah, okay. Then with Isaac and Allison, I said, oh, man, dude, you're going out with your best friend / maybe alpha friend, and she's maybe dating you, and I was just like, that was really awkward, but you look at it like they do have a connection together.
I mean, and like, who else was Styles meant to go with? Like, when Lydia was all like, oh, Allison, my boo, like, who, it's not like Isaac or Deaton is closer to Styles than Lydia is.
Right.
So, like, yeah. It's, yeah. I think it's just an interesting moment of, like, what people think about their relationships versus what their relationships actually are, if you know what I mean. Like, at this point, Allison and Lydia are still, like, in name. They're like, oh, yeah, we're best friends. They're not that close, though. I mean, like, anymore. Like, we barely see them together, and it's circumstantial. It doesn't mean they don't like each other, but they aren't as close as Allison and Isaac are now, and they aren't as close as Styles and Lydia are now. And I'm, you know, romantically or otherwise, they're just not the people who have been at each other's backs lately. And so it's like, in your head, you're like, oh, yeah, but that person's my best friend, or, oh, no, but I don't care about that person. And then you actually look at it and you're like, actually, if I'm, like, actually looking at this properly, that's kind of not the circumstance anymore. And it could be said about any relationship on the show. Like, if you went up to Styles and were like, so what do you think of Derek Hale? He would have been like, you know, his instant reaction would be like, ugh, you know, he's a dick, I hate him, whatever. But, like, if you're like, would you, like, throw down for Derek Hale and, like, die and protect him? He'd be like, well, yeah. And it's like, there's so many incidents of this show of people not realizing, you know, how care or love has, like, grown behind its own back, if you know what I mean, like, without even the person who it involves realizing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then at the end of this scene, Styles very not subtly drops a bombshell and basically says that Scott's father is back in town. And yeah. I kind of gasped at this part, like, really loudly. And I was like, oh, my God, who is it? Like, how does he know that he's back in town? I was clueless, guys. I was totally, totally clueless. And, you know, it goes, like, the camera goes through the window. We see the guy's back. Still didn't know who it was. We see the book on the floor. He's reaching down to pick it up. Still didn't know who it was until they panned up on the FBI agent badge. And I think I screamed because I did not see it coming at all. It was so surprising. And yet I feel like we should have known the whole time.
I did know the whole time because I was spoiled for it. So I didn't get that reveal.
I know. I feel so bad. What about you, Chantel? I mean, you read the script first, so when you came to that part, what were you thinking?
First, I thought, how did this man get into this woman's house? I was so blown by, does this guy still have a key? Like, is he a creeper? Does he tap the phones? And then, but then it brought me back to, wait a minute, why is he here? Does he know something else? Does he know something supernatural? Or is it just like, oh, I miss my family. Maybe I should just go check on them every once in a while or something. But I was surprised. I was a little happy, just a little bit, because we finally get to see Scott dead. We knew that he wasn't dead.
Yeah.
So and then the cool thing was he was on the set when I was there for that week, and he was really nice. And I didn't know who he was, and they're like, oh, that he plays Scott's dad. I'm like, whoa! He's so good looking. This is gonna work. Yes.
I end up watching the show a couple of times just to sort of get all the information in my head to be able to do the podcast. But just talking to the listeners out there who maybe only watch the episode once and then wait for, like, you know, it to come out on Netflix or on DVDs. Go, if you can, go to the MTV website when it comes out and watch the video again. Watch it again, because Styles' interactions with the FBI agent, with Scott's father, are so much more meaningful when you know who this guy is. I mean, context is everything, and you realize why Styles is so mean to him, why he's so sarcastic. I mean, he's kind of nasty. Like, he basically says F you to this FBI agent, and and you don't really understand why, other than maybe, okay, Sheriff Stilinski and this FBI agent must have some sort of backstory. But no, you realize that he just hates this man because of what he's done to Scott and Melissa, and it's just amazing.
Yeah, those were my favorite Styles interactions from Styles. It was really good. Really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just really curious as to, like, we've never had a hint. Like, we've never had a hint that his father was involved in basically the police force. I mean, it's FBI, but, like, because Styles is always the one going on about all of that kind of, you know, learning from his father and all of that kind of stuff. And, I mean, I guess Scott's father hasn't been around, but, you know, it was clearly something they once shared in a way. Like, their fathers both did this. And they, you know, Scott's dad clearly has an opinion of Styles' dad. So, yeah, so I don't know. I kind of want the backstory there.
Especially when he got on him on Oh, is he still drinking? I said, well, who is you?
Yeah.
Oh, for real. God.
And then we get that last scene, last two scenes. Basically, we see Derek healing Cora, becoming a beta. We see the three kids going under the water. Scott's eyes pop open. They're yellow, and it literally fades to black. And all I kept thinking was, oh, my God, oh, my God, I need a drink.
Jesus.
Oh, man.
That's rough, buddy.
You just start praying. You grab your favorite blanket and just say, Jesus, take the wheel. Please don't let that happen to these three kids.
I mean, the sacrifice thing was really beautiful. And I mean, I'm wondering if what you said about the, you know, will he not be able to become a true alpha because his eyes were so yellow, like what it meant his eyes were like yellow underwater and stuff like that, you know, that he was not dying potentially, like, you know, that his eyes were open. The sacrifice thing with them all bringing their little totems was quite lovely. And I mean, I know what you mean as well, Chantel, what you said earlier with these like kids sort of turning into adults in this like moment. It was very, very nicely done, like the moment of them all getting to the baths. And it's, and the fact that it was the three of them, like Scott, Stiles, and Allison, because they're really the three focal people from right at the start. It just,
yeah,
mm-hmm. it was a lot, like it was a lot to watch. And then Derek as well. I mean, I don't know what the hell's going to happen for him now and for Cora and for Peter, but I can't believe this has literally been like a four episode, like continuing, like it's like 9, 10, 11, 12 are all the same night pretty much. Or not the same night, but like the same 2 days or something like that. And it's all been like straight continuing on. It's pretty intense.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. And I have to say, Derek, seeing Derek become the alpha that we all wanted him to be was true. It was sad in a way because you're like, no, he's going to lose his power, or oh no, they're both going to die, oh no, what's going to happen? But to see Derek actually sacrifice himself for his sister, to see that vulnerability that we all knew he had, to see that the human side of Derek, I thought it was really great. We had to see it sometime, so I'm glad it came.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So basically, with that incredibly frustrating ending to the episode, we're going to cut straight in next week to hopefully the continuation. And next week for the season 3A finale, we're actually planning to do a Google Hangout on video for the first time on Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. So it'll be me and Karen plus whoever else we can wrangle in, like, you know, let us know who you'd like to see on the Google Hangout. But we do have a few guests, you know, friends of Hyperbull who will be coming on to the podcast to be on the Google Hangout with us. And so you'll be able to watch us live on the internet, on video, on Google Hangout. And basically, we'll let you know when that's going to be. We're hoping to do one directly following the episode, like at 11 p.m. on Eastern on the Monday night. But number one, let us know if this is practical for you, if you would rather watch us directly after the episode, like that late at night, or if you would rather watch us the next night, like it on a Tuesday night. But basically, it also depends if everyone is able to watch the episode live. We will know within a few days whether we're going to do it live after the episode or whether we're going to do it the next night. But please let us know whether you'd rather it live or not, because that will also make a difference. Because it is obviously quite late at night. It's not like the episode airs at 7 p.m. or something. So regardless, we will have a Google Hangout for you next week, which is going to be fun for everyone, I suppose. Are you looking forward to it, Karen?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is going to be my first Google Hangout. I know you guys do it for Who Hype all the time. So it's going to be interesting. I'm going to have to make sure I don't do weird things. You guys are going to see how much I talk with my hands when I speak. But hopefully we'll get a lot of people interacting. And it'll be really fun to talk face-to-face, sort of, with Natalie and some of our other hosts.
That's really cool, guys.
Yeah, I'm excited. I've done a few before, but yeah, Karen has never done one, so it's gonna be cool. So yeah, I mean, if anyone you know, wants to watch, you can give us live questions, or, you know, on the Twitter or whatever. Yeah, it should be fun, hopefully.
Wow, that's cool.
I mean, you can come on if you're not doing anything, if you don't have anything better to do and you've got a Skype account and a camera, you can come on. But we're basically trying to get, we'll have 4 or 5 people on, I think, on the Google Hangout. Mm-hmm. So it'll be cool.
Oh, wow.
Either way, you know, we can watch. I mean, everyone can watch. I don't know if there's a way that people can call in, but you can certainly tweet in with questions and we'll talk about whatever you want us to talk about. Okay, so I think besides that, we will let you go for now, everyone, and we will, I guess, see you, like properly see you on with our faces next week. So that will be fun. All right. So if everyone's ready to say bye, we'll say bye.
Probably yeah. Should. Bye, guys.
Okay, bye.
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 Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to Chantel for joining us again.
Oh. A blast. I love you guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for hanging out with us. And it was not a big moment. Oh, what was that?
Oh, that might have been the motorcycle that just drove by my house. Sorry.
Oh my god. The what?
It was a motorcycle.
Oh. Thanks. Okay. Thanks, sorry. The motorcycle.